You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, heard here weekday mornings at 9 o'clock Pacific. It's July 24th, and we are live, and that is on Channel 2 at LA Talk Radio. There's free apps to download it so you can take us with you. And if you missed that opportunity, then we post the podcast later in the day at MariaSanchezShow.com, and we're also on iTunes and Stitcher, so there's lots of ways that you can get our program. Coming up this hour, we have our relationship expert, Dr. Bonnie, visiting with us. She's going to talk to us about the Anthony Weiner case that's going on. He is the candidate for mayor in New York. He held a hastily called press conference yesterday afternoon about his further sexting antics, and his wife was standing by his side. His wife is quite an accomplished woman, and it's just so sad to see these gals in these circumstances. And they said that The Good Wife, which is that show, which I've never seen, but I hear great things about it, was inspired by these modern day cases of the political men cheating on their women. So she's going to talk to us about what this may mean and why. And it's like, really, can't you help yourself? Dr. Bonnie wrote a book called Adultery, The Forgivable Sin, so that may come into this, because Anthony Weiner's wife, her name is pronounced Huma or Uma, depending on who you talk to, has said that she is standing by her man. And then later on in the program, we have Amy Linden visiting with us. She's a celebrity booking coach, and she's going to talk to us about the life of that, what that is. Now, yesterday we mentioned that the largest report yet was published by the UN Children's Agency known as UNICEF about female genital mutilation or cutting and how it affects tens of millions of women and girls worldwide, that more than 125 million girls and women alive today have undergone some form of female genital mutilation in 29 countries across Africa and the Middle East. And that's according to this report entitled Female Genital Mutilation / Cutting, A Statistical Overview and Exploration of the Dynamics of Change. We're proud to announce that on Friday, we're going to have Claudia Kappa, who is Statistics and Monitoring Specialist at UNICEF and the author of this report, visit with us and go into the detail of what is going on. And if you don't know what female genital mutilation is, it is, they call it female circumcision, but it's, and I think that that's putting it lightly. Male circumcision, as you know, is cutting off a piece of the foreskin, and it's done generally under antiseptic clean conditions, sometimes performed by a moil in Jewish bris services and other times by the pediatricians or the OBGYN in the hospital after birth. I have three sons. All three were circumcised. That was my ignorance at the time. I've done a lot of work on the subject with an attorney who's a Harvard Law School graduate. His name is Stephen Savoda, and he's an attorney by day, and he's a men's rights activist and actually a boys activist by night as a moonlighter. He started a nonprofit about 10 years ago called Americans Rights for the Child, ARC, and we speak about circumcision and usually male circumcision because that's what he focuses on when it's in the news. Female genital mutilation, however, is not conducted under those kinds of circumstances. And we'll go into all of those details on Friday, so you won't want to miss that program. So the NSA leaker is still in the news. Edward Snowden, he's going to stay in the transit zone of the Moscow airport for the time being while the Russian authorities consider his temporary asylum request. His attorney said that today. He's a Russian attorney who is assisting Snowden in his asylum request, and he met the 30-year-old this afternoon in Russia and said that Snowden had not yet received the pass needed to leave the airport after more than a month. And I always wonder about his mental health, how he's keeping it together, because in the transit area, as you know, there's hotels there, I guess, and that's his life. So what is he doing? How is he recreating? How is he eating? Who is he interacting with? Whatever. His attorney says that he's staying there for now and that he intends to stay in Russia and to study Russian culture. He did not immediately comment on a Russian news report that said that Snowden had received a document earlier today allowing him to enter Russia from the airport. So that story continues to unfold, and I'm following it just because I find it absolutely fascinating. It's a modern day spy story in my humble humble opinion. Here we go. Okay, so the Massachusetts state photographer, Sergeant Sean Murphy, had the closed-door session yesterday, and he's been placed on restricted desk duty while an internal investigation is in progress. The investigation is expected to take weeks. He's also been transferred from the Media Relations Office to the Division of Field Services. Public opinion appears to be in his favor. More than 59,000 people had expressed their support for him by yesterday afternoon on the Facebook page called Save Sergeant Sean Murphy. And the family of Sean Collier, who was the Massachusetts Institute of Technology police officer, MIT, who was killed, released a statement supporting him. The statement reads, "We believe that Sergeant Murphy's motives were selfless when he released the photos taken the night after our son and brother was murdered and the terrorist was apprehended. In our opinion, he has been sufficiently punished. Sergeant Murphy wanted to right what he and many in Boston and around the country saw as a wrong and to counter the aggrandizement of terrorism by Rolling Stone magazine." So Pope Francis is in Brazil for a week. He landed on Monday. Today he celebrated his first Mass outside of Italy as the pontiff, and he is in the world's largest Roman Catholic population. This is the third day of his visit for World Youth Day, which is a biennial church gathering, and it's being celebrated in and around Rio de Janeiro. He is going to be preaching to the faithful at Aparecida, which is Brazil's most important Catholic shrine. It's a shrine to the Virgin Mary and the site where Pope Francis, when he was Cardinal of Argentina, visited Pope Benedict XVI in 2007, and they say that cemented his place as a leader of the church in Latin America. So they're estimating about 1 million people from around the world are attending World Youth Day events. Again, he arrived on Monday, and in his desire to stay close to his people, he's complicated security tremendously. In fact, they say they're worried about him because he likes to get in with the people. So when he landed on Monday, he took a four-door Fiat for his ride from the airport into Rio. He insisted on using an open-top vehicle, and when the driver took a wrong turn, he was just thronged by people who reached their hands in, gave him babies to kiss, and he couldn't have been more delighted. So today, they have about 5,000 police and other security officials to be on hand at Aparecida, and it is the terracotta likeness of a virgin considered to be the patroness of Brazil. The Mass that he celebrated this morning, the folks had to go through metal detectors, and they had unseasonably cold weather, but it didn't seem to dampen their spirits. After the Mass, he's scheduled to fly back to Rio, and he's going to tour a drug treatment ward at a hospital run by Franciscan monks. And then later in the week, he's visiting a Rio slum. He's going to preside over services at Copacabana Beach and over the weekend give a Mass at a pasture outside the city. So researchers at Loyola Marymount University and Stanford Graduate School of Business released a study yesterday that found that men who were raised with female siblings tend to be conservative in their views of gender throughout their lives and more likely to vote Republican when they're young than their male peers. It took the researchers by surprise, and they're saying one reason for this may be that they were less likely to share in household chores with their sisters. Thus, they avoided housework, and that thought process continues into their adult years. And I sure know that in my family of origin. I'm the eldest of four. There's two girls at the top and two boys at the bottom. And my sister and I, we tended to our brothers. I don't know what we were modeling my mother's behavior, because I was raised in a fairly traditional home. My dad worked. My mother worked as a homemaker. She actually had a career. She was a medical technologist. And after child three, my father sent in her two-week notice of resignation. So talk about the good old days. And so then she stayed home from that point forward. So they're saying that one of the researchers said the effects were surprising to us. We might expect that boys would learn to support gender equity through interactions with their sisters. However, the data suggests that other forces are more important in driving men's political attitudes, including whether the family assigned chores, such as dishwashing, according to traditional gender roles. So they say that they tend to grow out of their conservative political leanings as they get into middle age. But initially, the sisters, if you're raised with sisters, you tend to be Republican and you tend to be more conservative in your views. So now we'd like to get Dr. Bonnie on the line, our relationship correspondent. She's going to speak with us about the Anthony Weiner situation. And we'll be right back.
The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Dr. Bonnie, welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Maria?
I'm excellent. It's always wonderful to hear from you, and thank you for making yourself available as our relationship.
You're welcome. This is my favorite topic, as you know.
I know. As our relationship correspondent and being in New York and catering to all kinds of demands on your career, because if anybody logs on, we'll post your website when we post the podcast today. She's a multifaceted, but the original reason that you and I became acquainted with one another professionally was when you wrote your book, Adultery, the Forgivable Sin.
Exactly.
And that seems to keep resonating in our lives. And Anthony Weiner and the woman standing by his side, his wife, just as of yesterday. So when I read the headlines yesterday, I was like, really? This guy can't seem to help himself. And there was a story published earlier, it was either earlier this week or late last week, that sex addiction has now been taken off of the DSM because they're saying they don't see it as an addiction, because I was thinking that's where he falls in. So why don't you just open up with your whole take on this?
Yeah, that gets me very upset that it's not seen as an addiction and they took it off the DSM, because, you know, everybody's so confused. Nobody really knows what to do with any of this, because on the one hand, adultery is glamorized, and on the other hand, it's bastardized. And so people don't know which end is up. And even in the psychiatrist and in the DSM, they don't know what to do. But the bottom line is, as I see it, it's a disease. It's a biochemical craving for connection is what I call it in my theory. And it comes from stress, loss, and separation, which you see a lot with the politicians. I was watching the news last night, and I was struck by the fact that Weiner's wife looked almost identical, except for the hair color, of her speech that Hillary said, mm-hmm. that she's standing by her man when Hillary stood by Bill Clinton. And she said, I've forgiven him. It's taken a lot of therapy. It's taken a lot of soul searching. And the problem is that I don't think he's being treated correctly, because I think it's a disease. And actually, he did the sexting a year after he came out of rehab.
Right.
So I want people to understand that if rehab is fine, I have no problem with AA, NA, any of those, but it's not enough. Why? Because when they come out of rehab, if they haven't gotten what we do is we balance the brain chemicals. The brain chemicals we're talking about, serotonin, which affects mood, and dopamine, which affects, you know, feeling alive, feeling in love, feeling happy. And those two brain chemicals have to be in sync. And most of us are not balanced, and we're not in sync. And when the politicians travel a lot, they have a lot of stress going on, a lot of loss, a lot of separation, especially if you're a congressman or a mayor, they have what we call burnout. And when they try to get less burned out, they get calm from self-medicating and stress-busting through an affair, which gives you a kind of a high, the same kind of high, Maria, that you and I would get from having a glass of wine or maybe having a piece of chocolate. And what happens is the sugar, blood sugar, if it's not even, which comes from stress, people will seek out even sugary foods. And, of course, that is worse for them than anything. So what we do with our patients, I have an MD that I work with. We test them for serotonin and dopamine. We find that they're always in balance. They're put on a diet without sugar to balance the brain chemicals and the brain sugar, blood sugar, and so that they can actually feel calm themselves, because he's out of control. You know, he's not able to control himself, and it's not his fault. I mean, I'm not condoning what he's doing, but I mean, it's a disease. It's just like alcoholism used to be. So we really need to see it as a disease and fix it instead of firing people. I mean, will he make a good mayor? If he gets his act together, he can make a great mayor. But he can't be out of control. And that's a symptom that he's out of control, because rehab isn't enough if you don't take the supplements that go along with balancing the brain chemicals, stopping the sugar, going on a blood sugar issue, which means diet, you eat every 4 hours so that you don't stress the body. When the body is stressed, it's going to look to calm it down like a sedative. And that's what adultery is. It calms you down like a sedative, makes you feel better at the moment.
Even though he actually is trolling, it's not like these gals are throwing themselves at him. They said that he found her on some relationship website called Formspring. So he's actively, like, I can see where...
That's what I mean by the person is out of control. So let me explain. A politician, the more powerful they are, the more they want to do risk-taking. The more risk-taking they do, the more powerful they feel. So it's just like forbidden fruit. It's like living on the edge. They need to live on the edge to calm down the blood sugar and the brain chemicals. Once that's all controlled, they don't have a desire to do impulsive things like this. They can actually kind of sublimate it, redirect, you know, those issues into something like going out and jogging or exercising in a different way. But the supplements have to balance them. You can't expect someone like this to balance himself, because politicians are always stressed out. And if you stress yourself and you burn out, most of the adulterers that I see are burned out. That means that since childhood, whatever happened to them, and it could be stress, loss, and separation in childhood, or it could be just being a congressman and being away from your family, it touches off the brain chemicals. Even jet lag, a lot of jet lag, you know, traveling a lot can also do something to the brain chemicals. But that all can be fixed. But otherwise, they can't control their impulsivity and their behavior. The diet is very, very attached to the kind of behavior. We see this with kids. Kids that eat a lot of sugar have behavioral problems. It's the same thing. It's not that the sugar is causing it. It's that the stress from the body is trying to calm down by eating sugar. And when that doesn't work, then you go to behavioral issues like adultery.
Now, we've spoken in previous conversations that you feel also that adultery is inheritable.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about. It's an inherited kind of thing that comes from generation to generation. Now, it can come emotionally, and it also can come behaviorally and physiologically. We inherit our brain chemicals, Maria. So that's why the Kennedys, right? If they have a serotonin dopamine issue in one generation, it follows to the next. Unfortunately, they're hereditary. The good news is with supplements and sometimes medication, you can alter the brain chemicals so that your behavior is intact. That's why it is hereditary. And in the Adultery, the Forgivable Sin book, I actually show, we're friends with Mel Brooks, and he named the genogram the cheetogram. And the cheetogram is a blueprint of the legacy of the family history from generation to generation. And you can actually do your own. And you can also see the one with the royal family is actually, you know, in the Adultery of Freedom Will Sin, because Camilla, who is Prince Charles's wife now, her grandparent had an affair with Prince Charles's grandparent many years ago.
Oh, my.
Yeah, this is, and that's, it's shown in the royal family genogram in my book. So this is how it passes down from generation to generation. The good news is we can stop it, but we have to stop judging adultery. You know, we keep firing people. We impeached Clinton. We want to fire people, you know, some of the Secret Service and all this. You've got to fix it like you did with alcoholism. Alcoholism years ago was seen as a character flaw. Now everybody knows it's a disease. Well, adultery is a disease too. And it happens in one partner in 80% of relationships. And 65% of relationships break up.
So are you saying 80% of relationships suffer infidelity?
One partner in 80% of relationships suffer.
Wow.
Infidelity. And 65% of couples break up. Now, obviously, I have a higher percentage. I have 98% that stay together. But it's because I am dealing with it as a disease, both chemically. I work with an MD who takes tests on these people. We do a urine and saliva test to check the adrenals and to check the dopamine and the, you know, serotonin, which is the brain chemicals, and we fix it with diet and exercise. So, I mean, what we want to do is stop it from reoccurring, which is what you see, you know, with Wiener. Now, it's going to reoccur if you don't, you know, if you just have psychotherapy or if you go to rehab and you don't do all the other things that I'm mentioning. And I'm actually teaching a course now, Maria, online called Marriage and Relationships, Keys to Success. And in there, I have a chapter, it's lesson 9, actually, in there, that's all about this adultery and what to do and how to handle it, because I really feel that we do not have a handle on this in our society. And even when I went to France for my book, Adultery, the Unforgivable Sin, I did a book signing, and all these women lined up. I was shocked. I thought that in France they accepted it. They said, no, we don't accept adultery. We hate that our partners go out between 5 and 7. It's called cinq on sept. Between 5 and 7, they go to their mistress. And then after they go to their mistress, between 5 and 7 o'clock at night, then they come back home to their partners. And the women were enraged.
Really?
Yes. And they actually have a name for it, cinq on sept, between 5 and 7. And they were lined up around the corner for Adultery, the Unforgivable Sin. I was shocked from, you know, to buy my book. I said, I thought it was accepted. They said, it's not accepted. It's not accepted by the women. And you could see from Wiener's wife's face yesterday, I thought she was exactly like Hillary Clinton. You know, I thought it was Hillary Clinton standing there saying, I forgive my man. I stand by him. I believe in him after all this therapy and everything. But we want to stop it. We don't want it to keep reoccurring. And it can. It's a disease. It can be controlled like diabetes.
Like diabetes.
Absolutely. I mean, it totally can be. And I should tell you, I was so excited. I just got the third year in a row the award for best therapist in New York City. And I think one of the reasons is because I'm really on a stampede to block out adultery. And, you know, my father committed adultery. I think, you know, my father was a cheater for 25 years. And for the next 25 years of his life, he stopped cheating. He got the help he needed. He was a sugar freak. He used to have a candy drawer in the house. Everything was sugar, sugar, sugar. When he stopped the sugar, they gave him supplements and medication. He did exercise, and he went to psychotherapy, and he stopped cheating. But for years, he was in psychotherapy, for 8 years, without changing his diet, without getting supplements, without balancing brain chemicals, and he couldn't stop. And he kept saying, I need help. I need help. I don't want to do it, which I'm sure is the same with Wiener and Clinton. They didn't want to do it, but something told them they had to. It's like a compulsion. My father said it was like a compulsion, that something told him he had to do it, and he was asking psychiatrist after psychiatrist, please help me. I have no control. It's like a train, you know, that has no brakes. And he got the help, he stopped cheating, but he kept asking, and we're not giving the right help to these people. We're judging them instead of helping them.
But what is interesting about what you're saying, I totally get the science behind it, but when does our personal responsibility come into play? It's like I can't help myself, but really,
no,
what about morals and values?
That's the point you're making, but I'm not excusing it, but I'm telling you, it's like a runaway train without brakes. Is it the train's fault that it doesn't have brakes? No, it's the conductor's fault because he's not testing the brakes. Yes. But it's not his fault. So my father kept going to therapy year after year and saying, I don't want to do this, but I'm doing it. What is wrong with me? Can you help me? Okay, because we're giving psychotherapy, just talk therapy isn't doing it. We're talking to the person, and, you know, Wiener and Clinton and everybody all say, oh, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. But, you know, think of it as something that is loose, you know, and it's kind of like the neuron is loose, and it's not allowing you to stop like a brake should be. So what the diet does and the supplements, it gives you more clarity and judgment. So your judgment isn't off, because everyone keeps saying Wiener's judgment is off. It is off. But what are we doing about it? You can't just talk to someone and say, okay, make sure your judgment's on. Your judgment can't be on if you don't have clarity. Dr. Morrison gives lithium orotate, which is just a supplement that gives clarity, and it helps focus, and it makes the judgment different. He usually prescribes this. It's the doctor that I work with, like sometimes twice a day for the adultery people. And he tells them to stay off sugar, including wine, including any kind of sugar, pasta, bread, any of those things, and exercise. And he gives certain supplements, you know, to keep them calm, like ashwagandha and a couple of different things to get him calm and also to help them sleep better. Because a lot of these people can't sleep. So if they can't sleep, they're not rational and they're not making good decisions. So all of that helps them to listen to the therapy and to be able to take responsibility, like you're just saying. Of course they have to take responsibility for what they did. But they can't do it if they don't have good judgment and clarity of thinking. And well, that's necessary for a good mayor, right? I mean, I live in New York. I mean, I want him to have good judgment.
I hope so.
See, but the bedroom is one thing. That's fine. I mean, that's separate, right, from what they do. But if their judgment is off, which is what adultery is about, the judgment And the clarity of thinking is off. When they study the brain of adulterers, their brains are different. The hippocampus, which is part of the brain, is a different size. From stress, loss, and separation, anyone you look at, the hippocampus is different. So we have to change the configuration. It's not that it's not their responsibility. We have to help them so they can be responsible.
So it sounds to me it's like you're in a maddening crowd and all of this noise around you. You can't discern what's going on. You can't even hear your own thoughts. And then if you follow the steps that you're talking about with the stress release and the diet and the exercise and the lithium orotate, that suddenly that noise will subside?
Yes, lithium orotate. The doctor prescribes that. It's twice a day that he usually prescribes it. But, of course, no one that's listening to this should go out and buy this without, you know, seeing a doctor.
Right.
Is a certain kind of enzyme. It comes from the regular lithium that they use for bipolar, but it is not the same as the lithium that they use for bipolar. It's just a derivative of it. It's not the same thing. It gets the people to think before they leap, okay? And you're not going to be doing these impulsive things, but it is a disease.
It helps with their impulse control. In other words, it gives them a moment to pause before they make a decision.
Absolutely. And so that's what I mean when I say, you know, say, what the hell's wrong with him? Because it, like my father said, I only found this out from interviewing my dad, who said to me, Bonnie, you got to make sure that when you treat these people, you know, it's a physiological thing. Because he said, you know, I love you. I love your brother. I love your mother. I wanted to stop, but something would make me make that phone call while your mother was sitting right next to me. I'd be making a phone call to another woman knew I shouldn't be doing it. He said it was like somebody that washes their hands all the time, you know, like obsessive compulsive, where he had to make the phone call and he was asking them. And he did, by the way, they diagnosed him with OCD too, obsessive compulsive. But they weren't helping him with it. They weren't telling him that that was what was causing it. They were just giving him talk therapy. And every time he would talk, he would tell them, I don't want to do it. And then, of course, when he was alone like Wiener, he would have to do it because the brain was getting addicted to the forbidden fruit, to the high that they got from doing something that was forbidden. Now, that high is coming from the serotonin and dopamine imbalance. Then you need something to fix it, a quick fix. Once it's balanced, you don't need the high. This is what's so beautiful about this whole thing. And I have a 98% rate of couples that stay together. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think my father gave me the answer. By going through the hell that he went through. And I wrote the book and dedicated it to my parents. They put the letters in there they had written to the readers. And really, the legacy that my parents left was, we want to help other people. We don't want them to go through what we went through. My mother, in her golden years, said she had a wonderful life with my father the last 25 years. But she went through hell in the first 25. But, of course, she didn't have the proper help. So I feel that I'm here for a reason. I mean, I'm here as a messenger to try to help people. And that's why I take this so seriously, because I've been through it myself. I mean, I lived in a family with a lot of pain. But no one commits adultery that's not in some sort of pain. It's an emptiness that's passed down from generation to generation.
But what's interesting to me is about the women that do stand by, because especially if they're not getting the kind of help that you're talking about, it's just a train wreck that's going to keep happening and happening and happening.
They don't know it because they're buying into, they're getting, I call it being sucked into the vortex, you know, and they're, and these guys are very, very, you know, as you know, charismatic and convincing, like car salesmen. And the point is that they can't change. They want to change, but they can't if they don't do deep change. Deep change is not going to rehab for 30 days and going to therapy for the rest of your life and finding out why you did it. You have to fix the fact that there's a lot of stress, especially in politicians' lives. They have loss and separation. I call it the biochemical craving for connection. That's my theory that I developed and saw it as a disease from the mistakes and from the pain and the wrong help that my parents received. Okay, and my mother loved my father. And just like all the patients I see, they're in love with their husbands or they're in love with their wives, but they don't know how to control this addiction. So, yes, I think it's important to stand by the person and give them support only if they stop the affair. They have to stop the affair, and they have to show remorse, and they can't use excuses why they keep doing it again. And they have to get the right help, and they have to be willing to stop and admit what they did.
So you obviously see folks that are dedicated to change, because if you demand that, one, stop the affair, two, show remorse, you can't fake that. You either are going to or you're not going to. And
well,
it's
most of the people that come to see me, one person wants the marriage or the relationship and one doesn't. So one person comes to me that's very motivated like you're describing and one is not. And sometimes it's the person that's committing adultery that says to me something like, well, look, I'm not doing anything wrong. You know, I love my wife, and I still have sex with my wife, and it's okay. You know, I have a lot of narcissistic people that come in and think it's okay to do. Now, if one of you thinks there's a problem, there's a problem. Like, there was that Nets, I don't know if you know the Nets wife, I forgot her name, from the basketball team.
Uh-huh.
She allows her partner, who's, you know, one of the Nets, you know, on the team,
right,
to have sex once a year.
Uh-huh.
And just go out and have a binge, have a fling, as long as she knows. Now, to me, that's because she thinks that maybe he is going to do it anyway. But I don't think that's the answer to let somebody have a fling. I think the answer is to find out what kind of stress, loss, and separation in his body and blood sugar is causing this, and emotional issues causing this, so that he would do something like this. Because otherwise, she's having to compromise herself, because she thinks that maybe then he won't want to do it also because it's not forbidden fruit anymore if she says it's okay.
Well, I've heard that from, I've interviewed the man who founded the Swingers Organization several times, and he says that they have the lowest incident of divorce for that reason, that there isn't forbidden fruit because both parties are agreeing to that.
Right.
And I don't know what you think about that lifestyle, but I mean, I think that's out there, but still.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, if we have two consenting adults, and they are okay with it. And, of course, I would never see them because, you know, one of them would not be, you know, not okay with it. If one of them is not okay and the other one is, that's, of course, when I see people. So if two people are consenting and if it works for them, great. I mean, I wouldn't want it because my father committed adultery, so I have a personal reason for why it wouldn't work for me. But it will work for certain people. People that have trouble with intimacy that can't get too close need something in the middle to dilute it. That's why they have Ashley Madison, you know, that cheater's website.
No, I don't know.
Ashley Madison is a cheater's website. And it's actually for people that cheat, and they are married, and they're cheating. And they have their highest incidence of, you know, people going on the website by women the day after Valentine's Day and the day after Mother's Day. Okay? And adultery is very high for women. I have a cheat sheet that I wrote in Adultery, the Forgivable Sin. It's actually something I wrote for Men's Health Magazine and the 2020, which is the TV show, on women cheating and why they cheat and the risk factors to look for. And women are almost identical to men right now because they're in the workforce, they're stressed out, and they're trying to self-medicate and give themselves a high also. So, you know,
now,
I think I've heard
from women that have had affairs is that it's because they're not getting it at home. And that's either intimacy or emotional connection and also sex.
Yeah, well,
and I'm
true.
Also not justifying it, but I'm saying that's – and so because they have a younger family or because they want to keep the family intact, they go outside the marriage for that, which is probably some of the reasons that the men do it too.
Yeah, see, and again, these are all rationalizations. They're all true. They're not that,
right.
It's not that they're not true.
Right.
But, you know, what I'm all about, why don't we fix the fact that you're not getting an emotional connection? But I have people that say to me, but Dr. Weil, we can't get everything in one. And when I understand, like when I go to the store, I'll go to the store today to get some things, and there's one store that I'm going to have to go to get the other thing because I can't get everything in one store. So
uh-huh.
I get, okay, but some of the things that you're getting from someone else, you really should get from yourself.
Right.
I mean, that's the definition of loneliness. What I can really get from myself and I try to get from other people, and what I try to get from other people, what I really can get from myself. So I think these are all cop-outs. If you're not getting what you need, then you need to go to therapy with your partner or talk to your partner with a dialogue process that I teach people and find out what's wrong. Why are you going to another person to get, because what you should get, the statistics are only 5 to 10% of people leave their relationship to go to the lover. That is low. 5 to 10% leave the relationship to go to their lover or their marriage. Why? Because we really want to have it with our partner. We mm-hmm. just don't know how to have an affair with our own partner. We don't know how to stay in love. And we don't want to do the work. We're lazy. We want it to come naturally, just like falling in love. And staying in love is not natural. Falling in love is. We like the high from meeting someone new, for the excitement, for the novelty, for the newness, for the lust. My opinion, you got to keep recreating having an affair with your own partner. You got to keep recreating the honeymoon stage instead of looking for a new one. Because it's only a matter of time. You're going to have a power struggle with the person you're with, that's your lover, and then you're going to move on anyway.
Anyway. Dr. Bonnie, what contact information do you want us to share?
Okay, so my website is www.drbonnie.com. Bonnie.com, and they can reach me for phone therapy all over the world, 212-606-3787, 212-606-3787. And my books, Adultery, the Forgivable Sin, other book, Can We Cure It and Forgive Adultery, talks all about the biochemical craving and the sugar and all that, and Makeup, Don't Break Up.
That's the other. So we're going to post all of that later today at mariasanchezshow.com. But I know you do international therapy, so I wanted to make sure that people know that too, Dr. Bonnie. You're so delightful. I can't thank you enough for making yourself available this morning. Thank you, thank you. And thank you for the good work that you're doing too. And congratulations on your third year in a row best therapist in New York City. That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, thank you. I think it's my father looking down on me and, you know, and all the work. Did. So, you know, I just hope that I can help other people. I don't want anybody to have to go through what we went through. But we came out fine because we're very positive and we knew we could do it.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
continued
Maria.
Success.
Nice talking to you as always.
You too. Take care. Dr. Bonnie Weil, and she is our relationship correspondent, and how great, best therapist in New York City for a third year in a row. We will put all of her contact information on our website so you don't have to worry about grabbing a pen. And we're going to speak now with Amy Linden. She's considered one of Hollywood's foremost celebrity booking coaches, and we're going to get her on the line right now.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and mariasanchezshow.com.
Hey, you've reached the Linden Technique.
We're going to have to try it again. Yeah, go ahead, Ronnie. Thank you. Amy is considered one of Hollywood's foremost celebrity booking coaches, and she believes it's not just about coaching or teaching, but about mentoring.
Hello, this is Amy.
Amy, good morning. It's Maria Sanchez. Thank you for being on the program.
Oh, hey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
I was just sharing with our listeners, you're live on the program, about your career. And it's not just about coaching or teaching, but about mentoring and teaching. And teaching them to be entrepreneurial minded, that's asking somebody who's left brain to also be right brain.
Yeah. It's interesting, but we've lost a lot of really great actors because they don't understand how to run a business.
Right.
And they come to Los Angeles and they're all, you know, really creative and very talented, but they don't know how to put together a package.
And let's go back through your career a little bit, because you were a personal manager for 9 years, and then you've been this international booking coach for almost 20, and the Linden technique. So what is a booking coach? How does it work? And I know you've got some nice names to your resume for that, so you know of what to speak.
Yeah, I'm happy to report I have 13 of my students are series regulars this year.
Wow.
6 new ones since January.
Wow.
So it's an international technique. I teach people all over the world. As a matter of fact, there's people I get letters from people from Ireland, from England, just from reading the book, they're able to book jobs, which is very exciting.
And the book
so
is...
I help people work.
A 15 guideline map to booking. So if somebody doesn't know what the heck we're talking about, let's talk about what booking means and how important that is. Because that's, if you don't get booked, you don't make money. You don't get fame. You don't get known. You don't.
Exactly.
You can't work.
I mean, just because you're a great actor doesn't mean that you know how to book a job. So it really is completely separate. There's really understanding how to get to the work, because most actors come from a scene study background, so they're process motivated. And Hollywood doesn't work that way, or most auditions doesn't work that way. Like, you'll get an audition the night before, and you don't have this long process to get to the work. So the 15 guidelines were built because they came out here with a great education and I knew how to act, but I just couldn't book a television job because I needed a partner, or I needed all these weeks to prepare. And that's how I was trained. So what this does is it gets you to the meat and potatoes of it really quickly, and you get to just break down the script and get in there and compete at a very high level.
So when you say booking, are you talking about the process which agents do, is getting the audition?
No, I'm talking about actually getting in the room and having them all nod and say, I want you to play this role, getting the job. So booking is booking a job, getting a job, working as an actor.
So you're saying that it's how you nail the part.
Exactly.
And can you give us a brief overview and what you think is possible and how it works?
Well, let's put it this way. Think of me as a Russian skating coach, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if actors would approach their work like they're an Olympic athlete and go out and practice it and practice it and practice it, they will book more jobs. It's just that a lot goes into booking a job. So much of the reason why somebody doesn't book a job is because they get psyched out even in the waiting room. So I created this technique to insulate them, like if you have a strong opening moment or if your environment is clear. So when you go in the room, you're completely protected and you don't pick up the energy from the reader. Because casting directors, they're not supposed to be acting with you. They're supposed to be able to look at you. So if they're acting with you, they can't look at you. So they don't read well. And most actors are trained to pick up their energy.
And
so
if people who are listening might not know even what you're talking about in terms of what the audition process is like, so can you break that down too? For first, there's a breakdown about what they're looking for from that point forward.
Oh, okay. So you get an audition from any one of the audition sites or your agent or your manager. And you get the sides, which is a scene, sometimes a week before, most times a day or two before. And you go in and you do not have a partner to read with. You either have a reader or you have a casting director. And you have to create the illusion as if you are this person and make them believe that you are this character so they can give you a job.
And you've got a handful of people staring at you.
Exactly, judging you, looking at you. And, you know, most actors, they get into acting because they want to be loved and wanted and supported, but that actually is the same reason why they're not booking a job, because nobody wants anybody that's needy.
Uh-huh. And but and they also, because I've been an executive producer on a couple of things and been involved in the casting process, my heart just breaks every time somebody walks in that door, either from the quivering chin or the sweat under the armpits, and I've seen it
horrible.
All. And I don't know why anyone would willingly put themselves through that. So they've got to have an ego that will allow them to face that constant scrutiny and rejection, or they're going to be like my son, who minored in theater arts from USC, can't take the rejection, so he realizes that he won't be able to act, because that's part of the
process. That's what I'm explaining to you. We've lost a lot of great people because they don't understand how to separate themselves out from that judgment. So what the technique does is it creates a world that you can exist in, where it's almost like, you know, that guy on the street that plays the guitar, he's also drumming, he's also a harmonica, he's also singing.
Uh-huh.
You bring in all those people and all that in with you into the audition room, and you're actually in that world that you've created. So they come to you rather than you go to them.
So that's actually a guide for all of us in our interpersonal relationships and in our business relationships. I mean,
I agree with you.
What you're talking about is translatable to everybody.
Yeah, it's the same thing with interviewing for any kind of a job.
Right.
When you go in and you're trying to figure out what they're looking for or about them, and it's very difficult to take them out of the picture.
So you might want to, here you could have an internationally appealing book because of what you're saying. It would even help us on dates.
Yeah, because I'm out there in the dating field right now.
You and me, sister. It's not pretty, is it?
Oh, it's difficult because you have to hold on to your power. And so it's the same thing as auditioning. A continually holding on to what is special about you and that you are the prize, you know, and to deliver that as the prize without asking them to accept you.
And what I have found, and I would be curious if you have too, is that the more I would say maybe it's self-confident or self-assured I am, the more of a threat that appears to be.
Explain that one.
And I'm not talking cocky, you know, and arrogant. I'm just saying, yes, I'm accomplished. I have a modicum of success. I have, you know, some assets, and I'm looking to share my life with somebody who can bring those things to the table too. And they're like, well,
you
don't
do
need to be.
You do realize if you had nothing, you would have had a better shot.
Yes. I know. Because men, if they can't rescue, they don't know what to do.
That's what I'm explaining to you.
Great. So we share that too.
Oh, we absolutely share that. Yeah, because it's difficult. The man needs to come to you and be an equal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's difficult for them.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of women are now more the aggressors, which I'm not. I'm still old-fashioned, and I expect them to make the first move just because that's how I have become accustomed.
I am with you, sister. I like to be the girl.
Yes, and so they're like, well, why do I have to work for that? Because I don't have to over here. And it's like, well, I don't know. is that work? Just seems like that's, you know, gender roles here. We're not reinventing the wheel.
Exactly. You could be the man. I'm really okay with that.
Yes. Yes. And that includes opening doors.
Absolutely. And it makes them feel good. It really does. I just think that a lot of girls today have ruined it for us.
Yes. So they say. So, Amy, tell us what you, Amy, is it Linden or London?
It's
or
Linden, yeah.
Linden.com and the LindenTechnique.com, which we will post later today when we post this podcast. Anything else you want to share before we say adieu?
Yeah, I would like to share to the people out there who have a dream and are doing things that they are feeling that is stifling them and they're unhappy, get out and do it. You do not want to be one of those shoulda, couldas.
Nice.
Get out and do it. Get out of your comfort zone and get out there and make it happen.
Thank you, Amy. What a great way to end the conversation. I appreciate your time. And continued success. 13 folks that are working, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you so much.
I also have a business site for actors. It's tltaccess.com.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it'll teach you the business.
Excellent. Amy Linden, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too. Continued success. This is Maria Sanchez. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, and we look forward to visiting with you mañana.
Friend.